ERCOT said that there was over 300,000 megawatts in queue by 2032. Peak contribution in ERCOT is 85 gigs. So that's four times the amount of power that ERCOT already experiences.
I have family in Medina County, and they're adamant that the six data centers are going to wreck their grid.
Behind the meter power is going to be one of the only viable solutions to do that at scale.
Welcome to this episode of the Building Texas Show. Today we're in San Antonio, Texas, and we're talking power. And some say energy. I like power. But we're visiting with our friend Nash Whitney from Stella Power Company.
Hey, Justin. Nice to be here.
Well, I'm thrilled to sit down with you. We've talked over the years about big distribution and the ERCOT grid and the need for businesses to really understand where they get their power from. So I'm thrilled to sit down with the audience today and talk about what it is you do at Stella Power Company.
Yeah, no, thanks. Stella is a relatively new company to the space, but myself, as well as all of the people are part of Stella, have been in the energy space all of our careers. So it's a new name, but built on decades and decades of experience, know-how, and expertise.
And in that expertise is really behind the meter power. And when I say that, people say, what does that mean? But it's not your power company delivering power. This is power that an entity produces separate from what they would get through the traditional power meter market.
That's right. And, you know, behind the meter power is kind of coming into its own in very much the same way that you've got a lot of non-power folks throwing the term gigawatt around,
right.
Which, you know, sounded silly at one time, but now it's become just part of the common vernacular when you talk about data centers and the grid. But you're right, behind the meter power, which is really where our firm spends our time and focused on identifying the most conducive locations for behind the meter power generation, and then working with landowners and developers, and ultimately the end customers who are going to need that power to establish a path that is a defensible, robust solution for power that doesn't count on the grid showing up. Because I think with the amount of volatility from the number of megawatts that are coming into queue. I mean, I think ERCOT said that there was over 300,000 megawatts in queue by 2032. I mean, peak contribution in ERCOT is like 85 gigs. So that's, you know, four times the amount of power that ERCOT already experiences from a peak load contribution. It's just a tremendous amount of load that's expected to come on the system. And, you know, behind the meter power is ultimately going to be one of the only viable solutions to do that at the scale that everyone is asking it to be done.
And when we talk about what Stella does, that could be power to a hospital in an outage behind the meter. It could be power to data center. It could be power to large manufacturing facilities that have to have generation that they're making their own power. And I want to take the moment to, and maybe you can help me understand, we use power and energy interchangeably, and they're not the same. And so I think when you read your bill, you see kilowatt hours. But in here, we're talking about kilowatts, megawatts, gigawatts. Can you help us break down what the difference between that is, and how would you relate that to a person that doesn't live in the industry?
Yeah, sure. So I think to the first part of your question, on-site power generation or behind the meter power generation. When you think about behind the meter, you think about the utility has a meter either right on the side of your house, it's your fence line, and they're responsible for bringing power to whatever that delivery point is. Behind the meter really operates independently of that. So from that standpoint, it can be a variety of scales, all the way down where we had a lot of experience in previous companies supporting large commercial and industrial loads with backup generation that would operate behind the meter, but it would also participate in grid programs.
Back to the grid.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But that principle scales all the way up to the size of data centers that we're talking about now, 1 gigawatt, 2 gigawatt. I mean, there's campus sizes that are you know, growing well beyond that, even over 10 gigawatts I've heard of. But in the world of energy versus power, energy is kind of the macro view. Oil is energy. Natural gas is energy. Renewables are energy. On-site power generation is energy. But a portion of that energy industry is really what we can talk about as power, being the creation of kilowatts and the delivery of kilowatt hours. And that's really where we spend all of our time with particularly fossil fueled natural gas generators that are responsible for creating electricity for a particular power user.
And that addresses the data center conversation head on, because there's I have family in Medina County, and they're adamant that the 6 data centers coming to Medina County are going to wreck their grid. Yep. And their experience. And I push back a little bit and say, no, these data centers have to have a plan. They Yep. have to have a solution that ensures they can provide their own power in a backup situation, but that they're not overtaxing the residential grid, which really looks different than
Yeah.
the power line running to some of these facilities.
Yeah, so there's been a couple really big movements, not just in Texas and in ERCOT, but across the country. The 2025 Senate Bill 6 aimed to start that transition of particularly data center and large load over 75 megawatts, their contribution to system upgrades, and restricting the impact of those upgrades into the broader, particularly residential rate base. So the Senate Bill 6 aimed to do that. And then just yesterday, Governor Abbott provided some additional insight into what the plan for addressing large loads into Texas is, meaning that not only on the power equation, where you can't contribute to broader system costs and have those rate-based, but you've got to be able to provide your own power generation, whether you're using the grid or not. You can't be a net detractor from the current capacity from the system. And he expanded that into water, which is a huge conversation, right, particularly around Central Texas and in the Hill Country. But there is a growing theme that the best way to address these increased loads coming from data centers is that the cost of serving that from the utility should be borne fully by those customers. And, you know, if you dive into that a little bit deeper, there's actually, I think, an advantage of forcing the data centers, not just from a socialized cost perspective or avoiding a socialized cost perspective from system upgrades, but just from a pure project capital deployment perspective. Because there's many utilities across the country that are slapping non-refundable deposit requirements down on data centers to the tunes of hundreds of millions of dollars for substations that they're going to need to go build. And right, it's upfront. They don't commit to a schedule. And one of the things that behind the meter generation unlocks is, in a broad sense, the avoidance of that lumpy capital deployment on something that you're not going to own, you're not going to operate, and ultimately somebody else is going to be responsible for maintaining and delivering. And by the way, the reliability requirements that a lot of the data centers are asking for, I'm not sure that there's any utility in the country that signs up for availability requirements. I think there's a market shift, both in terms of the awareness, because I think a lot of the data center folks in the industry were really trying to make sure that there wasn't latent utility power that existed still in the country, because obviously that's the first way to serve their preference for the first way to serve load. But I think with the growing shift in terms of how utilities are treating these requests, they're actually helping catalyze the awareness and education that these large load users have on the advantages of behind the meter power.
Absolutely. And I experienced this in my utility days when crypto production was a big thing.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't touch it unless they prepaid for everything. And we're definitely not going back to the membership in the co-op world or the rate base in IOU world. We're not having them pay for that. And I think that's a good, great distinction that it is, the burden is on those centers that are going to be consuming it to provide their own power and not be a detractor from the broader residential grid.
Yeah. No, there's a peak to the efficiency curve and broader economic impact for right. how end customers deploy capital, how the local ecosystem of businesses and people can benefit from that without burdening themselves with marginal costs due to these installations, and how service providers can help catalyze and accelerate the deployment of these large loads that bring additional tax revenues into their local economies. So there's a peak out there to the economic efficiency curve. We feel that, you know, a contributor to getting to that peak is behind the meter power. And I think we sense that it's starting to move that way.
So who would be your customer? Who is giving you a call and saying, hey, I need 72 natural gas generators and producing the type of power you're talking about?
Yeah. So one distinction about Stella is our business model is to develop, design, own, and operate power plants over a long period of time. We've got partners. We're part of the Arroyo Energy Investment Partners firm based out of Spring. We have a sister company called Mesa, which actually manufactures their natural gas generators in San Antonio. They're based out of Loveland. They have manufacturing in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and San Antonio, which I think is a great story for supporting load growth in Texas. But the end customers that we're talking to are the hyperscalers and everybody 2, 3, 5 levels down from the hyperscaler world.
And who's a hyperscaler?
A Microsoft, an Amazon, a Meta, a Google, kind of fill in the blank, the big users name. that are responsible for leasing a lot of space in provider buildings. And then below that, there's a variety of strata, so to speak, in terms of the value add to the data center industry, whether they're building a building that other people bring their own equipment in, and then you're leasing compute, or you're providing kind of the raw boundary conditions for a larger firm to come in and build their own outfit. So there's a whole world of data center and large load out there. But I don't think the power equation is restricted really to data center. I think that's just kind of occupied the mainstream news threads. But there's a tremendous amount of reshoring in manufacturing capacity that's coming back to the U.S. And they're encountering the same levels of a constrained grid as the data centers are. So I don't think that it's going to be a exclusive problem for one industry. I think it's certainly a much broader problem. And at the end of the day, on-site generation doesn't particularly care who the end customer is. We just want to deliver a robust product that's going to meet their needs.
And we learned a lot during Winter Storm Uri back in 2021, which seems a lifetime ago at this point. But it definitely opened the common Texans conversation around, oh, what's ERCOT? Now everybody knows ERCOT. And then it really drove a lot of conversation, and some of it positive, some of it still needing education, around how does Texas see this growth? And even the residential growth is a strain on the grid at some level because it has to be distributed. And so I see more and more people, more business owners having that risk reduction conversation around behind the meter power and how they can be independent of the grid if we had another Winter Storm Uri situation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that one event probably raised the awareness for how an energy-only market works to the average Texan almost overnight, because the folks that didn't know that they had exposure into the wholesale market very quickly realized that they do. And I think ERCOT being as unique of a market as it is, is one of the few places where the market can drive signals for investment. I'm a fundamental, Chicago school economics believer. The Milton Friedmans and the Thomas Sowells certainly resonate with me in terms of how markets can respond to demand signals. And price is a signal for investment. Obviously, there's some lag between how a market is going to perform and then the benefits that the additional investment can create. But I think the dynamic of how customers position their business to operate in an ERCOT market continues to evolve. And that's one of the broader benefits to having a behind the meter solution, that whenever the utility does show up. So for instance, if we're going to go deploy a behind the meter solution of 100 megawatts in a field that's going to have a data center sit next to it, and then the grid can't show up for 4 years, that facility, that power generation facility, runs independently of the grid until when the grid shows up. The grid shows up, and now all of a sudden, you have a captive hedge against real-time price spikes of the ERCOT market, which actually allow you to get the lowest cost power that you could otherwise go buy out of the retail space. Because the same functions that are happening in terms of when a power solution comes online to respond to price are the same hedges that a retail provider is going to provide, is going to bake in to their own estimated load shape for how they price an ultimate power product that you're going to go, they're going to go sell to an industrial user. So we think that we're actually helping create a more robust and efficient system for our customers in deploying these large power solutions.
Now, there's also the conversation of diesel power, natural gas power, other forms of generation, solar, wind, et cetera.
Yeah.
Where do you fall in that camp? And we've talked natural gas a couple of times, so I'll lead the question there. But there are different ways to produce kilowatts.
Yep.
How does that shape out in your mind?
So I'll start with the few that you named, and I'll end with natural gas. So diesel power is a great solution if you require on-site fuel storage. And that's one of the big benefits that it brings. It's easy to store. And the BTU density per volume is extremely high. So what that means in power generation is that for the same quantity of fuel, you can create that much more power, or under constrained loads or volatile loads, for that same density of fuel, you can actually withstand load fluctuations very well.
Right.
So diesel, particularly backup generation, has a variety of benefits. And, you know, look, there's a reason why, Caterpillar and the other OEMs are still sold out of diesel generation, because that is a industry standard for on-site fuel storage, backup generation for critical loads. When you get into renewables, I think there is always going to be time and place for renewables. But I think it's probably foolish to think that that's the only solution that is going to produce a robust grid. And, you know, there's been a real noticeable swing away from incentivizing renewables and then redoubling down on the tried and true fossil generation. I mean, the amount of natural gas that sits in Texas and in the Marcellus and in the Bakken and fill in the blank is tremendous. And, we've got a unique opportunity to create very low cost, efficient power at the scale that these ultimate large load users are going to require.
It's exciting to hear that, because it does take a decision process to say, what is the right economic solution for me as a customer? What do I really need this for? And how often am I playing the futures market on price? I mean, some of these systems can be very sophisticated if they're trying to shave the peak, if they're trying to
absolutely
preload and move with pricing. And that's a deeper conversation for people that are in that industry. But I also heard you say sold out on diesel. And so your Caterpillar engines, your generators, there's a lead time on that that data centers aren't necessarily going to wait for. Hospitals maybe can't wait for. And I continue to see having multiple solutions in the market lets people like Meta use multiple solutions and reduce risk across, hey, we have this option, we have these options, et cetera.
That's exactly right. Yep. No, there's not a one size fits all. And there's not a round peg for every square hole that's out there.
Well, Nash, as we are into the summer, and for people in Texas that are going to use a lot of electricity on their air conditionings and swimming pools, what is one general point of wisdom coming out of the power industry that you'd want the Texan homeowner to think about?
Yeah, so number one, I think it's always useful, whether you live in a NOE, which is a non-opt-in entity, a fancy way of saying a co-op or a muni, to download the ERCOT app on your phone. There's a tremendous amount of information that lives in there. Obviously, the notices that ERCOT can push out in terms of when the grid is going to be constrained. We all want to be good grid citizens, and we don't want to crank the AC down to 65, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon when everybody else is getting home from work and exacerbating potentially a problem that's in the making. So I think just continue to be aware of how the broader system is operating. And one way to do that is download the ERCOT app, pay attention to notices that come out that help your system provider alleviate some potential concerns. I mean, during Uri, when you were at Bandera, Justin, you guys did a tremendous job of notifying the members of when rolling blackouts were gonna happen so that you could plan. So I think that communication and awareness goes both ways. And it's great to be a part of, Bandera, for instance, that and a group that does that. But I think just broadly speaking, any energy consumer in ERCOT, it's important to maintain awareness.
Being a good grid citizen, I think that's well said. And we all play a role in the residential grid and ensuring that we're not straining it unnecessarily when we can know it is reaching a peak. We see them in July with cooling, in February with heat, and those are the peaks that we see in Texas. So, Nash, thank you so much for the conversation today. I always learn a lot about the industry, and data centers are a big conversation, but I will remind our listeners that they're working hard to not impact your residential grid. And Governor Abbott and others at the state level are really pushing to make sure they're not going to have that negative impact on your local power grid.
Thanks so much, Justin.
Thank you for enjoying this episode of the Building Texas Show. We release a new episode every week, and you can find us across all social platforms. Please like and subscribe on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
Thank you to our sponsor, Chisos Boots, and their damn comfortable cowboy boots.